In the twisting catacombs and ruins of the Necromunda Underhive, there are those who use their skills and knowledge navigating the tunnels to earn their living guiding gangs through peril to new opportunities. So grab your ammo and your respirator and join us on The Dome Runners.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Dome Runners. Today's episode is titled The Good Scavvy's Guide to Necromunda on a Budget. We're going to talk about tricks and tips to ease the financial burden of starting the game. But before I start, I wanted to take a moment to give my thoughts on a topic that I've seen come up in a few different forums recently: expanding Necromunda to include broader 40k factions. This comes up frequently in online forums, and the most common reaction I see is dismissal. I think I understand why, as most players think about Necromunda and the Underhive as a specific setting. So the addition of traditional armies to the battlefields of the 41st millennium isn't necessarily something that makes sense. Sure, there may be the occasional orc in the Ash Wastes, and Corsairs might make trade in the Xenos-friendly dome in the Upper Hive, but the game is mostly set far from that. Some players even find the inclusion of things like gene stealer cults and corpse grinders, which have rules in the game, to be narrative breaking. So a Tau Fire Warrior wandering into the Underhive really breaks what they see as the limits of the game. The thing is, though, Necromunda is more than just a setting. It's also a rule set, and it can be a really great way to play narrative skirmish games that are set in a different environment. They could be set anywhere. They could be set on a different planet entirely. So, if you're considering using outside 40k models, there are a few different things you can try, but they all involve a certain amount of experimentation. One, you could take something like Orcs or Space Marine Scouts and proxy them as a different game, say Goliaths. You could use Escher for Dark Eldar or Eldar. You could use Vansar for maybe Tau or Scions. This allows you to play the game with anyone, but it does mean that your Space Marines will die like Goliaths and that you won't have the exact same sort of feel of that individual faction. The Venator's rules are really particularly great at trying to integrate outside things into the game. I definitely recommend taking a look at those if you're interested in bringing in other factions to the game, because that can be a great toolkit for that. Another option is to write rules for a single model or a couple of models that are really strong, like they would be in the background, and then use them in the scenario. That is something that I am planning to do in a future game where I am going to be having an Astartes of the Imperial Fist Legion come down into the Underhive as a favor for an Inquisitorial Acolyte. And he is going to be holding down an entire flank of a battle, because that's how powerful I'm going to make him, because that's the whole point of bringing Astartes in. You want that Space Marine to really feel like a Space Marine. So, finally, there is one last approach, and it's by far the most labor-intensive, which is to use the Necromunda rules and write up homebrew factions entirely from the ground up, the way they did for Shadow War Armageddon, which came out the same year as the current edition of Necromunda, but was based on the old Necromunda rules. That game used basically the same 40k stats for different units, which wouldn't make sense scaling versus the Necromunda gangs, but worked pretty well versus each other. There have been a number of hobbyists who have worked on this idea, but I'm not aware of any having put out a finished supplement at this time. This is just a quick take on the topic, though. We'll delve much deeper into the subject whenever we get to Inquisimunda.
Tired of trying to find a way to spice up your Soylent's Veridans? Hankering for a meaty treat? Come on down to Hive Guys, Crocs, Burgers, and Fries. In an experimental mood? Why not order a Double Down, a hot Crocs patty sandwiched between two fried croute patties and slathered in our special sauce. And don't forget a hot side of fries to round out the meal. Hive Guys, because you don't have any other options.
Welcome, Scabbies. Today's episode is going to teach you how to get playing Munda on the cheap. I think this is an important topic because while I maintain the hobby isn't actually particularly expensive on a month-to-month basis, the primary issue with any war game is startup costs. At the core, the only thing you need to get started is a gang box and yaktribe.games, assuming you know someone who wants to teach you how to play. I don't think having more than one copy of the rulebook is necessary for Necromunda at all, and particularly since I strongly recommend writing yourself a crib sheet with all your unit's special rules and what their equipment does, etc. You'll need dice, but if you have a scatter die and regular d6s, you have everything you need because the special dice can be converted into charts for a d6 very easily. The dice are also fairly reasonably cheap on eBay, so if you are looking to pick up a set of Necromunda dice, you can get them from the starter set on eBay for not too much money. Counters are another thing that are good to have, and you could definitely pick up the counters from eBay, but I don't think that those are as easy to get affordably. But you could also simply, if you're using Yak Tribe's Underhive tools for your game cards, you could print your own cards and use a pencil and eraser for things like marking flesh wounds, marking which thing is out of ammo. There are also companies that sell acrylic tokens that are laser cut if you want to go that route. I could link to a couple of those in the show notes. Tactics cards is one of the items that's toughest to come by right now, simply because most of them are out of production. But if you're trying to get off the ground, there's a relatively simple solution. Games Workshop has a PDF of tactics cards that you can download and print yourself. I'll include a link to it in the show notes. These are great because it's enough to get started, it's a little bit of variety, and it's cards that aren't available in the other packs, so it gives you kind of your own thing. Both players could start with these cards, or if someone has a different pack, you could have those as your card pack or go up against their card pack, however you want to do it. The important thing is that those cards are enough to get you started, and that's all that really matters. If you decide down the road that you want access to the other cards, unfortunately, buying the originals is very expensive. But there is someone out there who has made a version of the cards that are printable that you could print yourself and use. Unfortunately, I do not have a link for those. I will take a second here to recommend that if you're interested in the Escher and Goliath gangs, Underhive is still a really good value set. You get two sets of dice, two sets of tactics cards, enough tokens to play, and as a bonus, you get a ready set of gaming surfaces that are extremely portable, and you get two gangs. The only downside is the book is not the same rulebook as the hardcover, so you will wind up with weird differences if you start playing with that. I don't recommend it. Just get the hardcover. You really only need one for your group, assuming it's only two or three people. You know, if it's a lot of people, you might want another copy. But the book isn't going to come up constantly throughout the game if you have made notes of all the stuff that you would otherwise be referencing. So that would be my advice there. Now, your first box of models is likely to last you a while, as you'll mostly start with less than 10 models in your gang, and there's always the potential for deaths. Still, eventually, you'll want another set of the figures. There are upgrade packs that Forward can offer that has expanded weapons. But another thing that people often do is called kit bashing, which is take new parts from other kits and combine them with your gang to add new weapons and gear. There are whole eBay accounts dedicated to selling bits. If you're saving bits from your sprues. You could potentially trade them with someone who has other things that they want, other collections. Things like bolters, grenade belts, plasma pistols, those should be relatively easy to get off of someone who is a wargamer, as most people have Space Marines. And one thing you know about Space Marines is that you wind up with lots of extra bolters, plasma pistols, and grenade belts. Another thing you can do is buy specific model, specific kits, in order to get a large selection of bits that you want. I was not originally someone who did this, but I really see the value in it now. If you want a lot of close combat weapons, some of the Age of Sigmar kits can be really good. If you're looking for certain guns, then I highly recommend checking out, for example, the Tempestus Scions and the Gene Stealer Neophyte kit. And really, any of the Imperial Guard command kits are really great places to get a variety of weapons that you will find useful in Necromunda. Some kits are a little bit different scale, so you have to be careful. If you buy guard heavy weapons, for example, those are mounted weapons designed to be on a platform. They're going to be really ridiculously big for being carried in battle by an infantry figure. So you're going to probably want to either kit bash or buy the resin kit or look somewhere else for it. Now, this is, of course, just a start. Eventually, you'll probably want to convert some hangers-on, hire pets, brutes, etc. Some of those things you can get from GW, some you're going to have to convert yourself. But we'll get into more of that when we cover each individual gang in future episodes. For now, we're going to move on to another way you can save money, scratch building terrain.
Gang in a rut? Can't afford to keep up with the arms race? Well, between you and me, there's a way you can beat them at their own game. Come on down to Jimmy's Guns and Stuff. It's where I buy all my guns and most of my stuff. Jimmy's carries all the hardware you want with none of the Vansar name brand markup. Got guns to sell? Jimmy wants them. And don't worry about the serial numbers. It won't be a problem. Don't forget to ask about our buy one, get a bottle of Rock Gut free policy. And don't forget to stock up on grenades and ammo. Don't get ripped off by Vansar pricks. Come to Jimmy's.
Scratch building terrain is one of the best ways to keep costs down in the hobby, particularly in games that thrive on a significant amount of terrain coverage. Today I'm joined by longtime hobbyist Short Fuse Joe to talk about his approach to scratch building. Joe, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much, and thanks for having me. You know, there aren't a lot of podcasts out there for wargamers, and it seems even less focusing on Necromunda. So when I saw the opportunity to help, I figured I should.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. I guess I'd like to start with asking you about what are some of the essentials that you rely on for scratch building? What do you always make sure you have in stock around your house in order to get going whenever you need to do a conversion project?
Well, that's a great question. Really, the things I can't go without, the bare essentials that you're always going to find in my house, are things like foam boards, cardstock in a few different thicknesses, plastic cardstock or plastic card, pieces of cork board, and foam sheets from a hardware store. That, along with a nice recycling bin just from regular household stuff, that's all my main sort of go-to stuff.
Yeah, I definitely agree about the foam core. I think that it's really crucial to have something like that that you can build structures with, that you can easily sort of design around because it's consistently flat. You can very easily put it together and get the most out of it.
Yeah, it's great. It's very forgiving, and you can use it for the building. You can use it for the basing. It's very versatile. It's good stuff. It's also usually pretty affordable.
Another one I definitely second is the corkboard. I love it for creating rubble, for adding a variety of kind of textures. It is great for reinforcing things, making ruins.
Yeah, I use corkboard all the time. And I use a lot of cardboard. You can do a lot with cardboard. You can texture it. You can paint it. There's a lot you can do. And I haven't tried it yet, but I've actually seen on the internet a lot of people using like toddler Lego, like Duplo, to fill up good space. I haven't tried that personally, but that's not a bad idea either.
Probably don't want to buy those new,
No.
but off Craigslist or something.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Another big go-to for me is things like soup cans, soda cans, anything kind of round that is going to break up the kind of straight lines that you're going to get building things out of foam core. I'm a really big fan of adding that kind of variety because I think it helps make things look a little bit more natural.
Yeah, exactly. And that's for me where the recycling bin comes in. Like you say, it's fairly easy to build on angles, but try and build a perfect circle, and that's a lot harder. So I'm like you, I rely on soup cans, pop cans, that kind of stuff, any kind of little bottle or container. But I do, like you, find myself going to the round stuff pretty often.
Another thing I've been relying on more is stuff like lids and caps. Just throwing that on a surface just to break up the sort of uniformity of it, and even just putting a little piece or a circle in the middle of it just to give it kind of the appearance of being something. It doesn't matter if it actually looks like it does anything. It just matters that when your eye sees it, it catches it as some kind of detail.
Absolutely. It doesn't have to look like anything in particular. It just has to look like something. Another good one too is produce containers, stuff that your fruits and vegetables come in at the supermarket that you normally toss in the recycling bin. Lots of good stuff there too.
Okay, so next up, I wanted to check in with you about what you tend to look for at the craft store, the hardware store, or the dollar store when you're shopping.
Well, I end up shopping at all those places quite a bit, and basically it depends on where I'm going. If I'm at the dollar store, essentials are going to be super glue, quart tiles, foam tiles, painter's tape. I get cheaper glue there that I might use for flocking, and I always, every time I go, I always take a little walk through the kids' toys section because it's amazing what you can find. I've seen full construction sets or full racetrack sets for just a couple bucks that, with very, very little work, you can use as terrain or you can cut it up and use it as greebles. I also like popsicle sticks and coffee stir sticks for lumber. I have a nice hobby saw and a square that I can cut those up at angles with, but if you don't have that, just a decent pair of sharp scissors will cut those pieces of wood for you.
Oh yeah, I'm a big fan of anytime I go into Starbucks, just grabbing a fistful of those things because you never know when you could use a little bit of wood or something like that in order to beef something up or build a structure of something.
Absolutely.
In fact, recently I was building a boat for a sump project and I built the frame of the boat out of the sticks and then I used Plasti-Cart around it to give the appearance of a metal boat.
Yeah, that's excellent.
I often find I need that added strength from something underneath the Plasti-Cart because it's thin.
Yeah, I mostly use some pretty thin stuff too, and you're going to need something for structure and support behind there. And wood is great for that. It's easy to work with, and wood glue works great on wood. It's good stuff. If I'm at a craft store, mainly for me at a craft store, I'm looking at paints and brushes. So if I'm painting a nice miniature, I'll typically use modeling paint from Vallejo or Games Workshop. But if I'm building a big scratch piece, it's a lot more cost effective to go with an acrylic paint, like a craft type paint or a toll paint.
Oh yeah, it's just not financially it's just not a good idea financially to try to use the modeling paints when you're doing large craft projects. It just becomes completely outrageous how much you'd have to spend in order to make it work.
Yeah, it's definitely not cost effective. But I've seen quite a few people get their paints from the dollar store, and my advice there is if you go to the hobby store, usually they have something better for the same price. I live in Canada, and we have a Michaels, and it's actually cheaper there. And same thing with the brushes. You're gonna find things a little more reasonably priced than some of the more expensive counterparts. And personally, I'm not one to pay more than a few bucks for a brush.
Yeah, I have the occasional expensive brush that I use for the actual mini work, but when it comes to painting terrain, I pretty much stick to dollar store, or not dollar store, but craft store brushes. And especially, I'm a big fan of the makeup brushes. Large makeup brushes make amazing dry brushes.
Yeah, a good friend of mine just gave me my first makeup brush not long ago, and I'm using it a ton. It's great. I'm going to get more. That's very good advice. And if you're at these places too, don't forget a lot of these hobby shops have coupons. You can get 45, 50% off stuff, and be sure to use those. I had to recently pick up a new airbrush, and my old one part on it broke, and I needed another one that day, and I was able to go into Michaels, get an Iwata, and I saved $65, so I can't complain with that.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder how Michael stays in business with how good their coupons are.
And so lastly, when I'm out shopping, if I'm at a hardware store, that's where I'm looking for more specific things. I really like places like The Source in Canada for little electronic components like capacitors and resistors. If you're at a regular hardware store, you've got your sheets of foam there, you've got electrical boxes. And if I want a better glue, like I'll use cheaper glue for things like flocking, but if I have something that's a more demanding application where I need something really stronger, I'll get a good glue at a hardware store, something like a Gorilla Glue product. Their wood glue's great, their polyurethane's great. And if you need something that's really going to hold almost anything, an epoxy's a good choice as well. And the last little tip I would give is if you have a Fabricville or a fabric type store where you live, go in there and ask for the granny grating because that's very, very useful stuff.
Oh yeah, needlepoint mesh, I think it's called.
Yes. Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, one of my go-to things for the hardware store is to look for like yard sale signs and other signs. Those are usually made out of the same Plasticard that you could buy for significant markup from Plastruct. It's, just sheets of styrene, and you can get it way cheaper there.
Yeah, that's great advice, actually. I hadn't thought of that, but I'll have to look for that. I imagine you save a lot of money doing that.
Another thing that I really like to look for is stuff like pipe fittings,
Yeah.
little elbows and bends, stuff that you can apply to some scenery that will give it a lot of kind of a feeling of being part of a larger system without having to do a lot of work.
Yeah, they look a lot better. And of course, if you go and buy fancy injection molded pipe fitting ones, that's going to cost you a lot more. So the hardware store is a great spot for that too.
So what's your approach for making your stuff look less like a recycling pile and more like something that came out of the actual underhive?
Well, for me, the number one thing I think about is texture. And I came upon this through a different hobby. I also build Lego as a hobby sometimes too. And if you want to make a Lego building not look flat, you have to add texture to it. It's not just about the color, it's about the texture. And the same thing can be applied to all of this stuff. You can take something as simple as little pieces of cardboard, little even thin strips of paper, and glue that onto a plain box. And now instead of a plain box, you have something that looks a little more corrugated, like a shipping container. And that texture will grab the color, which will then grab your eye when you're looking at it, and it'll look cool. And you go from there and you learn to layer your textures on top of each other. And that'll not only give you more of a chance to get the colors in at different spots, but it'll grab your eye even better. And it looks really, really good from 3 feet away, which is where you're typically looking at this stuff. So texture is really, really the number one thing I look to in whatever form I can find.
I have to agree there. I use a mix that I make up myself of PVA glue, coarse sand, and then very, very fine pebbles and flock that you get for basing models. I find that the flock provides a kind of different texture. I actually am pretty sure that that's the combination that goes into the Vallejo thick mud basing material, and so I make my own kind of as an attempt to go cheaper for those things. And you can really, I think, adding that flock and the coarse sand and the gravel together, you get a mixture of textures. So it doesn't just look like you sprayed sand all over something. It has a little bit more organic feeling to it.
Yeah, the variety in textures you're using there is definitely giving you a much, much better look. Another one you could try throwing into your mix is baking soda. Baking soda is nice too. A lot of people think it's completely powder, but it's actually just a super, super fine grit that when you break things down to the 28 millimeter level, it can look pretty sandy. So your mix sounds really good. I'll have to try that myself.
Oh yeah, another thing I really like to use baking soda for is when I'm gluing two parts together and the fit isn't great. If you get a thick super glue and you pour it in there, the baking soda will cause the super glue to cure and it will fill it in and provide a much thicker, more secure hold than if you were to just rely on that super glue bond alone.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's another nice use for it. And really, when I first started this, scratch building was really all we had, and you had to just come up with whatever you could. And at first, the stuff didn't look very real. My first game, it was probably a can of pop and a box of Kraft dinner, and that was our terrain. And of course, that doesn't look like anything. And you're motivated to have a cool looking board, so you just get building and learn from your mistakes, and by the end, try to have something cool.
Oh yeah, I think we all had that phase where we started out and things were, just unpainted, whatever you had textbooks lying around for scenery. But I think that you can really evolve that pretty quickly just by doing something as simple as, cutting some strips of cardboard out and laying it on the gluing it onto the your soda cans and your soup cans and make it so that it looks like it's part of an environment, and then just hit it with a quick coat of spray paint, and suddenly you're in a much more immersive environment. Your gameplay is going to be more enjoyable because you're in a better setting than if you had just left everything unpainted. And it's only a small additional bit of work.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's amazing what you can do with just a soda can. It really is.
So next up, I'm curious how you go about planning your projects. Do you sketch them in advance? Are you just dry fitting with your actual materials to see what looks good? Do you ever use templates or stencils? One of the things I really like to do is use a template for arches on the foam core and cut arches into the foam core and then put that on top of, another piece of foam core. And that gives you that kind of visual connection to the Gothic arch, Warhammer aesthetic that is a little bit different from just the sort of recycled soup can kind of look. And I think can offer a lot of nice variation just by making that little additional bit of work.
Yeah, absolutely. That, you'll get that whole Gothic 40K vibe, and by cutting out your arch on that foam core the first time and using it as a template or a stencil, you're staying consistent on your whole board. It'll look really good.
Oh yeah, and another thing you can do is then use the offcuts.
Yes, greebling. Yeah, good, or texturing or whatever. Good thinking.
So when you're starting a project, do you like to plan out the whole board as one, or do you like to do things individually?
Well, I'll usually plan the whole board, but I'll build just a piece of it, like a prototype. I like to do that because I like to get any mistakes out of the way. If I'm gonna mess something up, it's better to mess it up on the first one and the single one rather than the whole board. And also, as you go, you usually develop some ideas and some changes and come up with ways to do things a little cooler. So once the prototype's done, I'll move on to the rest. And I try to do some things to save myself some time to build it all at once. So, like jigs for repeat cutting. So rather than measuring 17 pieces, I might put a stop block down on my cutting station and then just cut them really quickly. And I find when I build it like an assembly line, paint it like an assembly line, and not only will that save you some time, it'll help things look more consistent when you're done. I find particularly with the painting and the texturing, do it all at once, and if I can, try to do it all in the same evening or whatever, and that way I get a more consistent look. And with me, and this kind of touches on what you said earlier about it doesn't have to be perfect. For me, whereas I'm mainly building for Necromunda, it shouldn't be perfect. In fact, it should be kind of messed up, and things should look a little dirty. And if it's perfect, it's probably too good. And so that gives you room to make mistakes and forgive yourself for them, and just keep going anyway.
When you're building, what do you like to look at for inspiration? What gets you in the mood to put terrain together?
Well, there's really a lot for me. It's honestly, it's been amazing, especially these past few years in the hobby. When I first started playing Necromunda, it was in 1995. I was a teenager, and back then all we had was White Dwarf, if you could afford it, and a buddy of mine, Peter, who was just much better than me, so I could check out his stuff, and really that was it. Nowadays with the internet, it's amazing. There's so much on there. I see cool new content every day. Even just the painting tutorials from GW alone have really helped me a lot. And I see amazing stuff posted on Facebook groups every day. In particular, the Warcry groups I've seen on Facebook, some amazing stuff in there. Some of the most talented amateur painters I've seen around. Just beautiful, beautiful work. I also recently got myself a 3D printer, and my best friend got a Proxon foam cutter for Christmas. So those two things open up whole new worlds for us, and I haven't even spent a whole ton of time checking out the tutorials for that stuff. So really, with the internet, whereas I didn't have that when I first started this, the internet has done so much for providing inspiration. It's just been amazing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I got a 3D printer recently, and you're just able to, it opens up so many different avenues compared to when you're limited in terms of what you can produce by the materials that you have. I mean, I personally, just in terms of, I built a board recently that was a depot board, and if I had bought the crates that I used for it from Games Workshop specifically, they would have cost
I mean, probably $1,000 for the total number of crates that I did for it. And I just don't have the resources to commit to that. But the crates themselves that I use, I mean, it's just filler. And I love the GW crates. I have tons of them, but
Yeah, absolutely. And you probably were able to pick up a 3D printer for less than what it would cost to do the whole board in GW crates. And like you, I love those crates. They're nice, but I also like variety. I have some 3D printed crates that look a lot more like the ones I see down at the harbor in the city I live in. So it's a little more realistic. So it's definitely been a good thing. Another little tip I'd like to throw out for your listeners is check out the train hobby enthusiast groups on Facebook. They make stuff that looks super, super realistic, and you could pick up some good stuff there too.
Oh yeah, the train shop is definitely a dedicated stop for me. The textured plastic cards that they have, the corrugated and diamond plate plastic cards, the beams, the tubes. I mean, there's just so much variety of stuff that will make your build so much easier. If you go into the hobby train shop, you'll go to the Plastruct stand, and then you're going to spend an hour there, and you're going to probably spend $70 on various bits and bobbles of plastic because there's so much variety and they're so cool.
Yeah, I-beams. Although I'll say this, if you have a 3D printer, print yourself a corrugator and then you can corrugate your own plastic for cheaper.
Oh yeah, that's a good call. The corrugator is a great item to print. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the show. I really appreciate you taking the time out to talk to me.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. If I could just give a quick shout out to my gaming crew, that'd be great.
Of course.
Well, we've got my boy JP, we've got Dan and the boys at GW, Craft World's Canual, the immortal Alex Hart, Aaron Law Dog O'Connor, CJ the Straight Up Killer, my boy King keeping it real all the way from Nam, and lastly, Stinky Pete.
All right, thank you so much. Good day and good gaming.
All right, thanks very much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Tired of the taste of filthy underhive air? Having trouble getting out of bed to go toil at the Factoria to build the tools of the Imperium of Man? Don't give up, Hiver. Reach for your pack of Mardux Low Sticks, the finest ingredients and the most potent narcotics. If it isn't Mardux, it's not worth smoking. Nothing like that Mardux taste. Mentholated for smoothness. Mardux, the only name in low.
This episode on the Arbitrator's Corner, I'm going to talk a little bit about terrain and make your own rules for terrain pieces you make. The Book of Peril has a ton of different environment rules, including for a bunch of varieties of Underhive machinery corresponding to GW's plastic terrain range. You can easily come up with your own rules for interesting terrain pieces you make in the same vein. For example, you could write rules for a corpse grinding vat. Like if a player activates a console, the grinder turns on and everyone nearby has to take an initiative test or fall in and go out of action. One idea I've had but haven't used yet is for equipment like a crane or something with a cab like a bulldozer. The idea is that the user goes into the vehicle and then takes an action to get in, and then in subsequent turns they can take a double action to use the equipment. This could mean pushing objects around with a bulldozer, it could mean moving crates with a crane, or other interactions you come up with for your scenery. Maybe come up with toughness and wounds for the equipment so that if it's destroyed, the user will take a hit and then has to hop out. Hazards can be a great way to force players to make difficult choices. Making players take a strength test to pass through rushing water, or a toughness test to go through an irradiated zone, or an initiative check around a powerful turbine. Loud equipment could disrupt group activations. Hazards could simply do damage unless you go around them, that sort of thing. It really is a playground for you. Now, I don't recommend getting too complicated too fast. If you're just starting the game, get a hold of the rules before you start adding in too much complication. But once you are used to it and have a hang of it, I really think that it can be a lot of fun to, take the effort of putting your environment into the game and making it so that it's not just sort of a canvas that you're playing on. It's actually interacting with the players, and the players have to think about and outthink the environment. That's definitely something I'm putting a lot of thought into for the Nova terrain that I'm building. I am focusing on sort of building pieces that I can have rules for, and I'm going to have specific rules for the different pieces that will be at the table so everyone knows what to reference. They're not going to have to look up in a book. It'll just be on the table. It'll be a sheet of rules for things to use on that table, how they work, and you know what the interactions are. And it won't be that, you know, that much to add, but it'll be a little bit of flavor. And I think that people will really enjoy it when, for example, they take someone who is standing on a crate and move them to the other side of the board out of position because they weren't paying attention and you got to the crane first, that sort of thing. So I'm really excited for myself to come up with some of those rules. And I think that players really would enjoy it if you were to think about that when you're setting up your terrain and planning your games.
What's the matter, Underhiver? Gun Jen? Last cartridge fail after one shot? You messed up, didn't you? You went to Jimmy's. Fly-by-night scam artists like Jimmy will sell you a salvage gun they ran through an auto cleaner as factory direct, and they won't be there to back you up when the chips are down. Every Vansar gun passes a rigorous 12-point inspection. We have personally tested and calibrated your firearms, ammunition, and explosives to ensure the only victim of your arms is their intended target. Don't cheat yourself out of quality self-defense. Only buy certified Vansar brand guns and ammunition.
Well, that about does it for this episode. I've attached a recent arbitrated scenario that I played as I didn't have time for an on-the-tabletop segment this week. It's called Crippled Generators, and it's for three gangs versus an NPC gang. Thanks again to Short Fuse Joe for joining me, and thanks to Purple Planet at purpleplanet.com for the theme song. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to cover more of our journey through the Underhive. Thanks.